Where are we going? Welcome to this exclusive podcast produced by Spirit Watch Ministries that will show where life in our darkening times is now turning and how you can avoid the detours of deception through the hope of biblical truth. The Lord Jesus in Matthew 24 warned us over 2 millennia ago and how urgently we need to heed him now. Our host is Pastor Rafael Martinez, a seasoned Northwest Indiana-based minister, intercessor, and counter-cult apologist who will help you discern the journey of change we're all on as the last day of the last days now winds down. For more information, check out our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. Now, here's Pastor Rafael.
Thank you for downloading. This is Rafael Martinez, a minister in the Church of God Cleveland Movement, and I'm the director of Spirit Watch Ministries, an outreach of Christian discernment since 1993, now based in Hammond, Indiana. This podcast is called Where Are We Going? And it's our ongoing exploration of the depths of depravity found in our fallen world today, manifesting through religiously and psychologically abusive cultism. Part of the recovery from cultism is a return back to that which was lost to it. And we make no apology for upholding this simple principle. Shattered faith can be rebuilt, but must be understood for what it is and what it does to those it grievously wounds. Over the years, we've used research, interviews, and conversations with those who are directly impacted by cults to give our podcast the unique voices they have. Our podcasting, therefore, enables us to gain a Christian perspective as well into some very dark worlds of authoritarian spiritual and social slavery, for which, we hold, the light of Jesus Christ alone can guide the way out to true freedom, true peace, and true purpose. His imminent return to this world of woe is heralded by the rise of the slickest of deceptions as he warned his disciples in Matthew chapter 24 in the New Testament. We are only doing as he's commanded there, charging that you take heed that no man deceive you. Our podcast today continues with a series of interviews we had with Michael S. Black, formerly Michael Shamblin, the son of the late cult leader Gwen Shamblin Lara, who was the founder of the Way Down Workshop and the self-appointed leader and prophet of the Remnant Fellowship Church of Franklin, Tennessee. We've said from day one of our ministry that we have no interest in contributing to the last days of deception now at hand, and we've always preached, published, and defended biblical Christian truth and perspective that shows it for what it is. Our podcast today now continues with a perspective on the abuses and outrages that this movement has committed in the name of God, which were highlighted in the HBO Max docuseries, The Way Down, that our ministry helped to launch in 2021, the same year Gwen met her maker and stood before the judgment seat of Christ himself. We're thankful for Michael's contributions today. You know, Michael, it says a lot about Gwen to hear you describe how her heel was just dug into your neck and that of your father's. There's just so much that imagery brings up about who she was and what she really stood for. One thing's for certain, she wielded this absolute control that any cult leader aspires to and achieves over their followers. And in this case, that fear of losing connection with your loved ones was just very real. It was just, I think, just one of the most seminal and most absolutely gut-wrenching things they have to experience is to understand when your family might be lost or might turn against you.
Right.
And you've seen it again and again in remnants of abusive interference with marriage and family circles. It was a pretty common threat among the remnant nation. It was very common.
Oh, it was so common. I saw it all the time. And it's always in the back of people's minds, and it's, you know, I had to put up with it, you know, and I know it was just, I think it was one of the top things most people were worried about, to be honest. That's the top fear, and I'd say even since I've left Remnant, I've seen it just dealing with people that are maybe still inside the church or something. And usually the number one thing that they're concerned about is what their family would think about them talking to me.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing. They know you can be cut off.
Right.
And these kind of cutoffs are not just simple, signs of disapproval. They're like cutting you off.
Sure.
It's terrible.
It's excommunication. It's what it is. It's a disfellowshipping with strings. They try to tell you that this is godly love being exercised in you in this supposedly anointed discipline. But it's a horror that shuts you out of your lives. It cuts men off from their wives. It cuts off children from parents, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that involves just, I don't think most people really get it. Most people listen who are outside of Remnant or any other cult just never quite grasp just what a powerful, powerful way of manipulation and control that Gwen and others had. And you and your father and you were no exception. That's what we were just talking about. When you're given the direction of Ted Anger or Rob Day and they make a suggestion of how high you should jump, you did it. And that's what was supposed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And exactly.
So let's kind of back up here and review again, Michael. So we're now in 2020 and we're talking about where your life was going and it's segueing to 2021. But for Gwen, things just seem groovy for the prophetess. I mean, she was living large, living under the dream. She was in God's totally perfect will, doing as she pleased. For her church services and for her ongoing day-to-day operations, she had plenty of hosts that could fill in and an administrative leadership to whom she phoned in her homey, God-loving, blonde communiques and directives. She and Joe began to dabble in conservative causes such as local politics. And then they're also trying to wave the white flag with other religious groups there, which I always found rather interesting at this point that I remember, I think there was a social event that the Church of Scientology had at one point had as part of their usual recruitment went ahead and created for the religious community there in Williamson County and Nashville, and that she had been involved with that to some extent. Do you recall that at all? I remember seeing the documentation showing you that they were out there. Remnant had attended one of these things.
They certainly were doing that. And I all I remember is that the head of the Nashville chapter of Scientology, whatever you want to call it, they really liked Gwen, supposedly, which I think that's interesting. And I think Remnant even denied that they did stuff like that, but they were visiting and they sent, once again, I think it would have been people like the Days and the Angers, to go check them out. I think a lot of it, though, was more examining how Scientology deals with naysayers. I think a lot of it was more research oriented.
Okay,
like they were trying to see, they were trying to get in good because I think it's pretty well known how Scientology deals with people that are speaking negatively about them. So I think they were just taking notes and trying to get in good with that, learning what they do, how they handle.
Right.
I think a lot of it also was studying how do you handle online bad reputations.
Yeah.
Like search engine optimization, stuff like that, probably. I think some of it was getting to know people and these other religious groups, but some of it was just strictly research.
Right. Shop talk. In essence, they were learning on how they did things. And once again, it's just another interesting chapter of how Scientology has always seemed to be at the center of that. You know, several years ago, probably more than 20 years ago, perhaps or so, longer ago. It actually is a lot longer, but it's not a it's not a mystery. It's very well known that Scientology and other cultic groups, you know, every now and then will find it advantageous to come together and have these sort of little face-to-face discussions. And to the point that at one point, one researcher was calling it a cult cartel. That old term has still resonates today, and that apparently is just another manifestation of that, which doesn't surprise me whatsoever. But of course, but what was, you know, to quote Joel Osteen, they were just enjoying their best life now. You know, they're freely getting involved where they wanted to, and they could you know, hobnob with other authoritarian figures and groups, and it was just wonderful. You know, I mean, Dr. Gordon Melton, you know, J. Gordon Melton, one of the academics that Gwen got in her corner. He's a cult expert, so called. I'm not, of course, but he is, because the courts say so. And right. and he routinely goes into settings where cults are being challenged by members or other people in court, and he goes and testifies to how misunderstood and how harmless they actually are. So it's so this is just one of the many things that Gwen was starting to dabble in and get more sophisticated at. But she was still having fun, you know, dabbling with things and going here and. And so what was Remen's temperature in that spring of 2021? I'm sure we know that there was a lot percolating there with the so-called marriage directives, and the church service was so static. And so it was really just everybody basically trading water, basically, as we said, right?
Yeah, they were. But, I mean, we've obviously talked about the changing, you know, marriage doctrine.
Right.
I think that was still going through
the entire
church, and, you know, especially for the married woman, and, you know, and that's, I think these people, you know, they're no longer feeling so locked into place. I know we've probably talked a lot about that, but
we did, yeah.
And it, you know, it was, I think there was a lot of this birthing flesh going on as opposed to birthing spirit, you know, and that's, I think people were feeling that, you know, they were,
yeah.
They were feeling the justification to do the things. Gwen, they could see Gwen traveling with her new boyfriend, and it's opening the doors to a new era, right? I mean, it's opening to this door, and they still worship Gwen.
Right.
Right. But now there's a different feeling in the air about, you know, they're not, they don't have to deal with emotional misery anymore. And there's no more unequally yoked spiritually things going on. And, you know.
Right, because he was married. It was God's will. He was this Prince David coming in, you know.
And I want to say something, too, what you mentioned earlier about how everything's just so groovy. I mean, to be completely honest, though, as far as Gwen, she didn't want the members as a whole to know this, but I knew. She even would tell me, there was misery going on too. Yeah. You have to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. I think I've said that already. Once she divorced David Shamblin, and I said this to Phil Williams, but they never had a month of peace.
Right.
Because we've got the child custody stuff. It really took up a lot of their time fighting over this girl and who's coming into their lives, and Joe's daughter.
Right.
And she, it wasn't like she was just, everything was just picture perfect.
Sure.
I think people need to understand, yes, it was a different way of life, but it wasn't perfect.
Yep. Yep. Even the prophetess and her King David, you know, they're still people. They're still human beings, and they have to figure out how to live with each other, mm-hmm. and interact with each other, and talk to each other, and fight fair, you know, and do all the things that married couples need to do in that adjustment. And sounds to me like they had their hands full with that.
They did.
Yeah. So things were just going on, though. I mean, there was just this ongoing drift. That began with Gwen's disconnection from the weekly services we talked about. You know, there were many occasions when she entrusted, you know, Remnant Fellowship leadership to give a talk in church, reemphasizing a message. And she might even phone in toward the end to add her 2 cents worth. You know, everybody was just reading and rereading those flamboyant History of God series books. And those basically detailed the Remnant worldview, how everyone should think and feel about existence. But the real direction was really hard to come by since she was floating in and out. So who was really running the show there when she wasn't there on the day-to-day? Who's signing the checks? I mean, who's keeping the electricity bills paid, stuff like that?
Well, I mean, who was running the show? I think a lot of that goes back to the day group was still very involved, I think, right, helping things continue on as far as a lot of the big events, stuff like the summer camps and the stuff like that. They would have people, lots of volunteers were assisting with that.
Right.
I'd say as far as like, though, the day-to-day stuff, I mean, like the services, you've still got, you know, Joseph Langston, and you've got, you know, Jennifer Martin and Ted, and Amy Stites, kind of those people still running everything,
right,
so to speak.
And you were still privy to some of those meetings, right? You were even though, like I said, you basically had your wings clipped and you really weren't functionally involved with anything with relating to worship. You still had a seat at the table in terms. You were still privy to certain meetings, weren't you?
Sure. I was up until a point. You know, I was I was privy to some of it,
right?
You know, I think, you know, I was at this point, you know, watching all of this stuff happen, and they were, you know, they didn't want me involved with, you know, some of the top decision making things. But I was, you know, I was just there biding my time.
Yep.
And, you know, it was a difficult time for me. I mean, yeah, as far as, you know, I was as far as decision making, I was privy to everything but some of her final political push, so to speak, if you want, you know.
Right.
And that's kind of, I think that's later on, like right before the crash, when she really starts making those pushes. But other than that, I was still getting to hear, be a part of everything. I just, right, was still kind of considered on the outside.
Sure. I mean, you were there, your chief value was to look perfect, like you were the perfect marriage there. So you're still married. you're raising kids and you're in a, yeah, and you're in, yeah, a difficult situation trying to reconcile, I think, what we've shared is your profound revulsion of being attached to them. And you're putting behind this wildlife, but you're still trying to do the right thing where you were. And so that's where you were in that time. And, you know, this is now in January of 2021. And in the proverbial meantime, our ministry team have been working since 2018 when we first got approached by the Campfire Media Group to help create the Way Down docuseries on Gwen and Remnant. So by the time the winter of 2021 arrived, it was in full post-production mode. And the first attempts were made by the producers to notify Gwen that they were finishing the series and they wanted to invite her to be interviewed for it. So that was the year things really, really changed for you in 2021. And Remnant, however, you know, I know has tried very hard to make it sound like we were just this hack operation, had just started working on it. And I guess they didn't want to admit that so much work had already been done on it, as we've already talked about here with how much time we spent and energy we put into helping them create. So when they reached out to, when the Campfire people, Marina Zenovich, the producer, reached out and tried to tap Gwen to be interviewed, can you describe how she first heard them and their reaction to it?
Sure. You're talking about HBO. Yeah. I mean, what an awesome documentary that was. I mean, you said it's Campfire Media, right? Ross
Dinnerstein.
And yeah, Marina Zinovich. Wow. I think around, you know, it was early. I think at one point we talked about it. You said 2018. That's right. They were starting to contact random people within leadership, and even members in the church. They're obviously contacted people outside of the church, but so they're kind of just starting to reach out. I want to say it was Niall Capello was what investigative journalist.
Right. I think
she was probably doing a lot of the digging, maybe the initial digging.
Yeah, she did. She was the first one. She contacted us first. We vetted her and listened to her. And like I said, when we finally were convinced that she was going to do a decent, non-controversial, fair job, that's when we started talking turkey with her about cooperating and working together. So she was the principal researcher. But I believe it may have been either her or Marina that reached out to Gwen and let them know that this is coming down in the January of 2021.
Right. So they were obviously contacting people. And I actually was contacted as well by one of the executive producers, Rebecca Evans. It was something through my Facebook Messenger. But I was at the time, completely not even close to writing anything back to her, because right. I mean, that would have just tipped everybody off too if I had responded on my own. So I was just watching it all play out, you know, and I know they're reaching out, they're trying to bring balance to the documentary and stuff like that. But I mean, there was a lot of talking about this for a lot of months when this started, especially as far as marketing goes. I did get to sit in a lot of those marketing meetings, but Gwen had pretty much made the decision already that no one was should be responding to these people reaching out unless it was Candace Anger.
Mm-hmm.
Or Candace Anje, whatever, but she was the chosen media spokesperson.
Okay,
and so it would be like a lot of people chiming in, like, "What should we ask? What should we say?" And then Candace would be the one reporting to Gwen and actually contacting people. I'd say people in the church leadership, people that knew, they were excited, but it would always it would kind of be quashed. Like in the remnant mud, you know, with just like a word, Gwen would come in and say something like, you know, this church isn't going to be lifted up with media. You know, that's not how we're going to get famous or something like that. And so she would just immediately, you know, dash everybody's any kind of excitement. But I think there was definitely problems, like what these people were picking up on too, like as far as what the documentary could be about,
right?
You know, right. Like there was a lot of what I don't know the word, you know, guessing. There's a lot of, you know, thought put into like what could be and what could they be saying, and because we've heard so many, there've been so many rumors over the years, so many things that have gotten out. I mean, it's hard to know what is going to be in this. And I think there was be people in a lot of the state would be almost like they're excited, but they're also scared to death. Like that's right. The mode I think most people were living for basically the remainder of this time period. And, you know, Gwen and Joe were in the same boat. I mean, they were maybe the most nervous.
Yeah,
you know, because we're talking about how, once again, you're saying, you know, they're just living the high life, but they've also got this hanging over them. Besides the custody stuff with Natasha, they've got this hanging over them now, and right. They know something's going to happen. But you know, it basically felt like this massive train wreck is coming, but like you're seeing it from a long ways off,
right?
And I think that's probably what contributed to them binging even more on drugs and alcohol, you know, with the partying people. I think that's very likely. I think Gwen had a premonition somehow that I think her own kind of glory days weren't far off. I don't know. I think she kind of saw something coming.
But there was also this subtle optimism that seemed to be, well, maybe this is a good thing. I mean, right. they had just been trying to get their own little reality series.
Right. That's perfect. I mean, that I think the whole thing too was kind of contributing.
Yeah.
To sort of forcing Gwen to want to get her own reality show out, you know?
Right.
Like to try to beat it to the punch, or, you know, they're not going to participate with HBO, but at least she can get up her own.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, they're officially declining, you know, to say anything for HBO besides like what we talked about. You mentioned Gordon Melton, that
yeah.
The remnant expert. Oh, the things I wish I could say about Gordon Melton. I mean, that guy, that was what was kind of, this is like afterwards, but I'm not, this is not to put anybody down. He's a supposed cult expert, but this was Remnant's big guy they were relying on to be, you know, if HBO comes out, we're going to get Gordon Melton to respond. And because Gwen's not going to talk, but they're going to have him be interviewed. Like, so I think they did have him reach out possibly. But he was, once the documentary came out, you know, so when the documentary actually did come out, they decided not to use anything from Gordon Melton, because he had never been a member of Remnant. This is our big guy that Gwen was relying on. Mm-hmm. He had never been a member. He'd only been to like one or two services. I kid you not. That's all right. He'd ever done. Right. He was simply paid off. He was taken out to multiple lunches and dinners by Gwen and leaders, so he's going to put in the good word. And I think HBO, they pick up on that real fast.
Oh, sure. And they did.
And on top of that,
yeah.
This religious expert, he's also, this is something later, I started doing some digging on this guy. I'm sure you already know, but he's like completely obsessed with vampires.
Yeah,
and he's written multiple books on vampires, apparently, and he's like deeply involved in quote unquote vampire studies. And if that's not enough, you know, I think he served as president of the American chapter of the Transylvanian Society of Dracula or something like that. It was the Transylvanian Society of Dracula. He was like the president.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's who Gwen was all excited about defending her.
Yep.
And I'll kind of leave the listener to interpret that how they want.
Right.
But, you know, I will, you know, I can't help but say this, but witches and vampires like to defend each other.
You're right.
But, you know, that's who we were leaning on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, exactly.
And it's funny because they never saw a frame of the video of the docuseries. They never found out exactly what was even said, but they were already
they just
had this, like you said, premonition. So they trying to come up with their plan A and plan B and of course they had other things to worry about and to get involved. But like I said, they were, like we talked about, they were experimenting in kingmaking. They were already actively participating in local Republican activism. Mm-hmm. They had backed Marsha Blackburn in a successful Senate run, and she's now running for governor of Tennessee, even as we speak.
I know.
And she is now, like I said, her first allies there in the area were people like Ted and Candace Anger, whose daughter, I understand, helped worked in their office and brought them together.
Right.
Before I knew it, there was a picture I saw somewhere in which in front of Ashland, Marsha Blackburn's signs were posted very prominently while she was running for Senate.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Gwen, if people have to understand, Remnant has always sought, you know, they're not just trying to take over the pathetic you know, members' lives that are here in Brentwood, but they're trying to take over the whole area, the whole vicinity. Right. I mean, they've done this for years. They've always tried to be, this wasn't a new phenomenon, because they've always tried to be like a playing factor in local politics. You know, remember early on, I'm sure you're familiar with this, but we were all pitching in and trying to make, he actually was a former preacher, and now remnant member, Don Fisher.
Yep.
And that's his son is who married Grace, Elizabeth's daughter. Right. But we were trying to make everyone was trying to make him elected as one of the one of the commissioners of Brentwood. They have like seven commissioners.
Right. There was a
board.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they make the decisions for the entire town, city of Brentwood, suburb of Nashville. And I mean, we had like the fish for commish signs, you know, they were putting these fish for commish everywhere in Brentwood. And I mean, it could almost be looked at funnily, but I mean, it's not. I mean, we were basically, with Gwen leading the way, you know, trying to take over Brentwood.
Right.
And that's a lot of people in the area, especially a lot of the leaders or the higher ups or the politicians, people were picking up on that. Other churches were picking up on that. And that's exactly what was happening. Gwen would deny it, but that's what was happening.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually very worrying to me now, as that kind of stuff still happens. But, you know, the members would just be so excited about having somebody they personally knew, you know, because everybody knows each other in Remnant, right? And having somebody they know in a position of power. And that's the Marsha Blackburn thing. Right. I mean, that was definitely going on.
She just became another part of that network that Gwen was at the center of, trying to, you know, actively collaborate with other people who are like of like mind and like philosophy. Yeah. And of course,
well, that also, I mean, I don't know if that gets into, if you're wanting to go that direction, but it gets into kind of the stuff later with the politics with Gwen, you know, before the crash with
that's
the MAGA type stuff. But that's, I mean, I know Marsha Blackburn is involved with that, but that's, you know, she was, I don't know if that's a direction you want to take or go, but.
Oh yeah, well that's where we're going right now, because it was the very reason why when the unthinkable happened, that Gwen and Joe and company were in his citation, flying to a political rally on Memorial Day weekend, 2021. I mean, that's where they're going. They had forged links with the Trumpian MAGA movement, and they interacted with to some extent, and to the point where they're actually going to fly down there and be involved. I haven't heard anything directly, but it may have been possible. She may have even got up and maybe even try to speak at some point there. I don't know, but that's where she was heading.
Right.
Yeah. But
that's the direct, and that was a big deal. That's a big deal. And it happened right there at the end. I mean, that's a big deal for her to move in this direction.
Yeah.
For Gwen to move in this direction. I mean, I don't know if that was even touched on hardly much in the documentary, but I know it was a little bit, but I mean, you know, people need to understand that she was starting to pivot there. You know, if people are listening to this, she was pivoting there at the very end with her desire to lead Remnant. She'd already kind of mastered the dark art, you know. She's bending people's minds, you know, as far as the church went. But that wasn't enough for Queen Gwen anymore. There before long. And now, so she starts eyeing, you know, the slightly more, you know, conservative Christian MAGA movement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was the next harvest field.
And she'd grown tired of being queen of Remnant.
Right.
But I mean, in the talks of politics, you keep in mind, in that day and time, everybody is talking about politics all the time. Anyway, it's in everybody's everyday conversations. in lives around this kind of 2020, 2021 time period. And Gwen, she's the type that she can't even come close to not being in the spotlight.
Oh, yeah.
So when she starts seeing that Trump and all these people are getting a spotlight, it really kind of starts kicking into high gear within her mind. And I'll tell you what, the one big event, I don't know if you knew about this, but it was the one big thing that really set it off was the General Flynn Nashville event. Mm-hmm. And for people listening, if you don't know, he's like a retired U.S. general, big promoter of Donald Trump, or at least he was at this time period. And he was national security advisor or former national security advisor. And then he's like this huge spokesperson for the far right, you know, the ultra Christian nationalist type groups. And Joe Laura was actually a massive fan of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He worshiped this guy.
Oh yeah.
Right. So he was dying to go when he heard that General Flynn's going to come speak in Nashville at an event. Joe was dying to go. So someone else at Remnant, as it just so happened, they had long before known about this. They'd bought tickets for themselves. They had 3 tickets. And when kind of word gets out, somebody hears that they have them, basically that Gwen and Joe want to go. So this person basically gives her and Joe their tickets.
Oh, yeah.
And David Martin gets the 3rd ticket. So there's only 3, and those are the 3 that go. Gwen, mm-hmm. Joe, and David Martin. And I mentioned this to Phil Williams, but Gwen was basically like mobbed at this event.
Really?
Yes. After it was over. And keep in mind, this is what was being relayed to us from David Martin and Gwen when they came back. But I do believe this happened. But word kind of got out. You know, keep in mind, this is a big kind of quote unquote Christian crowd here, big church crowd, whatever you want to make of that. But once they realized Gwen Shamblin, you know, from the old, you know, faith based way down workshop, people remembered that from back in the 90s. Word kind of got around in that event. And as soon as it's over, she's treated something like a celebrity.
Sure.
As it ended, there was like, there was like a line of people wanting to speak with General Flynn and, you know, from David Martin, there's also a line of people wanting to speak with Gwen.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Gwen, you know, told me, she was saying, telling us stuff like person after person, a woman was coming up to her saying, my husband's a preacher in Texas. And, you know, we just love you. We remember you. We still love you. Just one after another,
yeah.
And
music for her ears.
She was mobbed, and it was like it was basically the 90s all over again.
Yeah,
he was a Christian rock star again,
right?
And now it's in a slightly political way, you know. So they're when they come back, they're flying high with their self-aggrandizing, you know. When they come back from this event, and they told everybody in leadership at a meeting. I mean, this was pivotal big for Gwen. She's already tired of leading Remnant. I mean, she still loves the praise, but she's tired of it. And I think, in my opinion, I think this is what I think. I think she suddenly saw the whole entire Trump-supporting MAGA group of Christians, like this 80 million-strong group of people. I think she saw them in her mind as like potential Gwen worshiping, Remnant supporting people.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And this was what that's what
the fields are white unto harvest, baby.
In her mind, and that's what she'd been missing. You know,
mm-hmm.
something like being nationally recognized person again. She'd missed that, and so instantly, leadership, the office, all of us. She's having people researching all things politics. There's these big text threads that are set up for people to post any and all political news. David Martin, it became his full-time job at this point, his obsession. Of course, David, he's wanting to please Gwen and be her biggest kiss-up supporter, like always.
Right.
You know, so he volunteers. He sees Gwen heading this way. So David Martin all of a sudden is obsessed with politics. He didn't know anything about politics before this. Now he's obsessed with it because he sees this is where Gwen is going. And so it was eye rolling to me because David Shamblin had been into politics, knew about it for years and years. So I got plenty of politics learning from David Shamblin. And I would do my own listening throughout that time, but this was eye rolling to see them all of a sudden just jump into this. These people that didn't know anything. And it was constant. It was daily. We all met. We met on politics daily, talked about it. Gwen was acting. She was meeting with people. She started setting up meetings with people that had political knowledge or connections. Like one of them was like, they had a son at West Point. So we go to lunch with them and we talk about, you know, how a lot of these soldiers are feeling about MAGA and Trump. It was constant. And she's trying to rebrand herself. She's trying to be like this woman for Trump type, you know, political figure. And I think one of the women she was looking at was like Candace Owens or something back then. Mm-hmm. I don't think Candace Owens is the same anymore. I think she's changed. But back then, Gwen looked at somebody like that. Like she saw herself as being able to do something like that.
Right.
Be
like a Sarah Palin, something like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So. It leads up to the Palm Beach. You know, she started telling us how she would just love to be in Trump's presence, you know, so she could give him, and that to me was another thing. I just couldn't. I mean, I was going, cause I know she's going to try to give him advice.
Oh, sure.
And Trump is also, you know, for whatever people want to say about him, I think it's hard to argue. He's a narcissist. And he's going to know he's right, and she's going to know she's right. And that to me was always kind of a secret, like, morbid curiosity kind of thing. Like, what would happen if they actually got in the same room? Hmm. You know, like what's the old term? You know, an immovable object meets an unstoppable force or something.
Right.
But it was...
Well, that's why matter and matter meet. What happens, you know? So,
but I really think she thought that the way she would talk in meetings, she felt she could run things better. We've already talked about her incredible narcissist type personality.
Yeah.
She felt like she could do surgery better than doctors. She knew more than anybody in the room always, no matter what. So she's going to know how to run the country better. I guarantee you. But that's what she was looking to do. She wanted to be in Trump's presence. And they started doing this whole, you know, leading up to this plane crash, just right at the end.
Yep.
They start setting up the secretive Palm Beach weigh-down event. And that's where they would be heading right before the plane crash.
Yep.
And they had... I was in pretty regular contact with the marketing women and stuff like that. And they had secretly printed like new way down remnant business cards for the event. Didn't tell anybody. And in fact, there were actually some women in marketing that were upset because Gwen had done these things and not even told them. Like she was very much on a need to know basis.
Mm-hmm.
So she had the chosen ones that she was picking to go down to Florida and set up booths. And lots of people and remnant leaders. And there were those people are being told they were making plans to travel down. Like I think some people for this event down in Florida, I think like Joseph Langston renting a big boat and taking it down to Palm Beach, like stuff like that. People were turning this into like a mass migration or something.
A bandwagon.
It was a big deal, and it was kept completely under wraps.
It's the rush of temporal power, man. I mean, they've already had their fill of religious power, but now they could see how the religion and how the basic malleability of human nature, how people are so easily turned, could be exploited and turned in a different direction. And they were seeing new markets, as you said. They were seeing new places. Yeah.
Picture the people, you know, Jesus getting on a boat in the lake and people rushing the other side and trying to like make him king. You know, they're trying to force him to be king. I mean, that's Remnant was headed, you know.
Yeah.
These people were headed down to Florida on by boat, by air, to go make Gwen queen, you know, and all of this. And they felt it. And she was keeping a lot of these details here. I mean, we're getting down to like the last weeks here of her life. I mean, she was keeping details from me. So I was having to ask around because I was considered a huge threat to this push and politically. I mean, I actually confronted her outside the Remnant Church one day after a lunch meeting. And I told her, we were walking into church, and I told her, just me and her to her face, I said, I didn't join this church to become 100% Trump supporter. Like, that's not why I joined Remnant. That's not why I helped start Remnant, for us to turn into a political machine. And I wasn't sold on this.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, this is a man. Son of God is a man. People are fallible. And I was saying, that's not what I signed up for. And I could tell she was thinking through what I was saying. It basically, once again, it just sealed my fate.
Yeah.
Because after that, you know, I would receive the sniper threat from Joe Laura.
Okay.
And, you know, they knew that that's why they were keeping that stuff from me.
What was the sniper threat again? Illuminate us again. I think you've mentioned it to Phil Williams and others, but it's just for a quick overview. What was that about? Was that, you said, stemming from your interaction with Gwen over this?
It was the media. It was a combination of the media and the political. They felt that I was a threat to throw all of this. I mean, I was, you know, they were trying to get these, you know, way down south. They were wanting to get her new reality TV stuff going, and they knew this new political venture she's starting out on, this new direction. They knew that I was a threat. Basically.
And what were your threat? Were you just trying to just shake them up, trying to realize, hey, this isn't the way we should be going? How was that threatening to them?
I think it goes back to what I was saying when I was kind of biding my time to see how the whole reality TV thing would play out.
Mm-hmm.
So like if something had happened, if they get well known and famous, then that kind of enacts my own plans, so to speak.
Yeah, you're just basically a voice of dissent. You're just trying to give them, you know, hey, maybe you should put the brakes on. Maybe it's just something you shouldn't be doing. And in an absolutist world like a cult, where everything is black and white, and especially, and if you're a leader, you're going to toe the line. You're going to goose step with everybody else.
But I was going to go to the media. You know, I was going to expose what had happened before.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I could quickly be a huge. They knew that I could quickly be a very big problem.
Okay.
If all of a sudden she's up there talking like, you know, with Candace Owens or somebody on Fox News. I mean, all of a sudden Gwen is a daily, regular, huge thing. Well, then all of a sudden my opinion's. It's I'm going to be somebody that's an insider and going to do something like what I did with Phil Williams.
Right.
And that's just, it's problematic. And so I remember that's what it was about. And Joe, you know, his big hangout, you know, that barn, that's when he did it. I mean, it's right there near the end. And Joe had a barn. Actually, David Shamblin is actually the one who kind of got that barn set up to be a cool hangout, but Joe gets to move into it. But you know, he turned it into his workout room and place. That's where he made his own bullets with gunpowder. Well, I don't know if people understand that he's out there making his own bullets all the time. He had lots of weaponry, and he had me come out there, and he tells me to walk in, just me, and I'm standing around. He's like working on something on his bench, just looking down his makeshift workbench, and he just picks up a Creedmoor sniper round, and he says, you know, in a weird way, he's like, this is what I'm going to take you out with from 1,200 yards.
Hmm.
And I took it as like, this is what we're going to take you out, you know, the remnant. And I was freaking out. I didn't say anything. That was a majorly harsh thing to say to somebody, especially knowing that we're kind of enemies.
Yeah.
And like I told you before, it was like a Cold War kind of thing. And, you know, the picture they just sent me, the threatening picture to my son with a cat.
Right.
At Remnant, you know, I was scared, and I was just like, okay. And I walked back outside, back to Ashland, and left.
Well, he just held his ground.
I think I went straight to lunch with David Shamblin after that.
Okay. All right. So he holds his round out, or round up to you, and he said, this is why I'm going to take you off from 1,200 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looks at you and says that.
Yeah. I mean, he hardly didn't even look at me. He was looking down his workbench mainly. He just kind of picked it up and showed, you know.
Wow.
These are big rounds. And Joe is not the kind of guy, he doesn't say stuff lightly.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty careful with his words too. And I was shaken up, but I went to lunch with David Shamblin right afterwards, and I did let him know. I mean, looking back, I could have filed a police report or something, but that was, I think I was just really shaken up in the moment. There was so much going on at that time.
So everybody's basically flush with this new passion that's kind of energizing everything else. It's kind of giving everybody kind of a renewed mission, a new will to live, so to speak, because of so many possibilities that, contact with the political activism could bring to Remnant and Gwen and the message, right? I mean, that's what was going on.
Exactly.
You're at that point in which all things were possible. However, as we've already discussed, the unthinkable happened. My wife and I were that morning picking up a pernil at a local meat market in Hammond. It's Puerto Rican pork. She just makes it so beautifully well. And suddenly our phone lit up, and it was Natasha. She basically told the same story she told in the docuseries about the terrible news about how she learned that there had been a crash, and she didn't know where her daughter was, and that she finally, by the grace of God, managed to get that. I won't tell her story here. It's an unbelievable story. You've heard about the docuseries, but she was already driving her U-Haul back to her home in Chicago. Within 24 hours of the crash, she was reunited with her daughter, packed her apartment, and blew Brentwood once and for all with the help of friends. So she saw that opening, and she took it. And sadly, that crash did take place as they were taking off on Memorial Day weekend that Saturday. When your mother and Joe, your brother-in-law, Brandon Hanna, Jennifer and David Martin, and of course, Jessica and Jonathan Walters, they all died when Joe's Cessna 501 Citation jet crashed into a 6-foot-deep lake. And we were all familiar with that. We already don't need to rehash that. But one thing for certain, it was certainly an unexpected thunderbolt of destiny that blindsided everyone, including us. I mean, we were absolutely gobsmacked. We couldn't believe that this had actually happened. I can't even imagine, right, Michael, what that day was like for you. But what was it like for you when you heard the news? How were you advised about it, and how did it impact you?
I remember the actual day pretty clearly. I was driving on the interstate, and I heard about it was I got a call from Elizabeth.
Okay.
And she had Aaron, my ex, on the phone. And she basically was relaying to us what happened, that that this looked like a plane crash. She was, and this was what was kind of odd about the whole thing. Because she was saying things like, this doesn't look good. Like, I don't think they made, you know, I don't think they made it, stuff like that. And, you know, she had already been literally in that brief time placed in leadership position of Remnant, like immediately by the remaining leaders, like in real time.
Mm-hmm.
So she actually was having people give her actual real-time updates, because some of the Remnant security men had personally already driven to Percy Priest Lake. They knew something was up, to watch the scene, the investigation. So you already got Remnant security heading up there. She's already got people on site telling her, because all of these people already knew who to kiss up to and give the, mm-hmm. they were giving her the first information
right
at that point. So she's relaying it to us. I recall going back home, and I actually was feeling like, you know, like a form of gratefulness.
Mm. Yeah.
I know that's kind of a, maybe hard for some people to hear. Almost, I don't want to say happiness, but it was close to that. I knew, keep in mind, I had just been threatened a few weeks before. I was never going to need to worry about his stupid sniper threat.
Was it more, you like know, a relief?
Yeah. And I wasn't going to have to worry anymore about this monster of a woman.
Mm.
I feel like she's, you know, she's finally gone. And I wasn't going to be open about these feelings to anybody, but I couldn't help the fact that I wasn't devastated,
right?
And I knew that. Sure. And I wasn't miserably sad, like, you know, everybody else kind of seemingly was really miserable. I recall that first day, I think I called my dad, David Shamblin, to let him know. Keep in mind, it was just at that point starting to show up on the news, too. And so I was trying to call him to let him know before he saw it on the news.
Right.
Because that's still his, you know, ex-wife. He cared a lot about Gwen.
Of course.
But I think the very first conversation we had that day, that morning, or that early afternoon, was it suicide? That was literally our very first conversation we had. Because I never felt completely confident that it was just an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the NTSB report, which came out, and I was privy to get. I got to see it all. I was listed as one of the personal families of victims, you know, with on their sheet. So, with Gwen being my mother, so I got to see all of their report. I got to work with their investigators. They would keep me updated.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It was, you know, people, and that kind of gets, you know, into the whole crash. What happened? But that's how that day was. It was a wild time.
Sure.
To be there, and I'll say too, just for people to be fair. I mean, my point of view is going to be different from other people's. I had received, you know, so many threats, so much, I've got so much abuse from these false Christian, you know, Gwen worshiping people. I mean, I couldn't bring up emotion anymore.
Sure.
I couldn't grieve over that.
Sure.
I had too many days, too many weeks, too many months, too many years, I mean, I do remember thinking my first thought is who's going to keep the cult moving. I knew that was kind of a question. And I was also, I do remember immediately having some kind of thought like this could be used to pivot to more of like a community friendly direction or something.
Yeah.
Cause you didn't know at that point what Remnant could be. But then of course, immediately it becomes obvious it's going to be Elizabeth, running it just like Gwen version two. But it's a big deal. You know, when seven people, it's not like one person died, you know, not like the leader of a church died. It was seven leaders of the church. And on one day, and I tell people like, you know, like business or corporations that have something like that happen. If you have like a major corporation and like seven of the top leaders all die in a plane crash in one day, that kind of business doesn't usually make it. And right. That's why they don't let people fly together. That's why the president and the vice president never fly together.
Right.
Because for that very reason, you don't have something like this happen. But they piled everybody into that one plane.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I think I was just going, wow. Like, I mean, this was to me, it really was Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. I don't know who said that on HBO, but that's my first thought too. It may have been you saying that. It wasn't me.
No.
Somebody said Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, but that's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, I think I wrote that in my journal that day.
Yeah.
It was like the witch is dead. And because these people at this point, they're considered my enemies. And I never in a million years expected all this to happen.
Yeah. Well, as we said, though, they made themselves your enemies. That's what they did.
Yeah.
They turned what was should have been just a normal, regular relationship between a mother and her son and a family. He completely destroyed it and turned it into something else. And certainly, it's totally understandable that you or anyone could feel such a way because she perverted so much of it, so much of that life.
Yeah.
He just destroyed so much of it. And so it's totally understandable why you would feel that way and why the situation, you know, get into that, you know. So how the Remnant itself react to catastrophe? I mean, we know that in the HBO documentary, how the Weingard family, whose Remnant member daughter Delaney was to marry another churchgoer, Jackson Rector, the very day of the accident, they were so blown away at Remnant's at their children's and Remnant's unwavering decision to go ahead and go at the wedding anyway on the same day that the crash took place. The Remnant social circles there at that time, they were snapped into this unspoken social engineering beast mode that kind of froze all motion or all mention or acknowledgement of the tragedy. They just literally put the mask on and act like nothing occurred. But of course, it certainly did have an impact. How did Remnant itself react? How did you start hearing about what was going on?
Well, I think at that point, you've got a pretty heavy atmosphere in Remnant of like dread going on. I mean, I think people were freaking out. I think they were seeing it in the news. They all saw the text from Elizabeth.
Uh-huh. The
very confusing text from Elizabeth.
Right.
And I think a lot of people were they were scared because they know there's a lot of hate out there towards Remnant.
Yeah.
And there's obviously we know about Remnant's teachings on blessings and curses. Uh-huh. And that's been hammered home plenty, but I think, you know, if that had happened earlier with, you know, with Elizabeth losing a child, now what does this mean?
Oh yeah.
And you can't but help think, you know, I can't imagine what's going through people's minds at that point.
Yeah.
I think it probably was close to like what I mentioned before about, you know, they're thinking about the documentary's coming out, that whole, I think there's a little bit of, you know, like wondering, like what's going to happen with Remnant, but there's also this scared to death mode. And
they're just
I think they were thinking that every major media outlet is about to jump on them. They're about to pile on.
And they basically did.
And they basically did.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I mean, once the shock wore off, I'm certain, I mean, they're human beings. Everyone's human here, of course. But, right. You know, and when such a tragedy hits you, the shock, you're going to be in shock. And people go through shock in their own way. Everybody's individual. But then once that shock wears off, then this unimaginable surges of grief and fear and dread, like you said, just settled about you. And, right. And like you said, the grief was over the death of a leader that was long respected, loved, but yet primarily feared. And right. Those fears were fanned by the terror of a world that of their whole world that just ended suddenly.
And that's why they put those videos up on the website.
Yeah.
That's why they started going into overdrive, putting up all these, you know, horrible backwards treading videos to try to erase their doctrines that they've been cramming into people's throats for 20 years.
Right.
You know, that they make all these pivots real quick. Every one of the videos are completely fake and they're non-reality. And, you know,
what were the content of the videos? Just for those who've not seen them.
Well, some of them were just like, we're a welcoming church. You know, you've got Patrick Stites and right. Just, you've got the doctor saying, you know, all the body sizes are different. You know, we don't judge body sizes. It's made up of a bunch of different body sizes, you know, and, you know, even as now we're not getting to catch a glimpse of Remnant's next, even slimmer evil leader. But they were just bracing themselves for major public shaming. And I don't know. I think they were trying to shield the kids at that point.
Right.
I remember them trying to just have lots of activities for the kids during that period. Just like fun parties, sleepovers. They would have sleepovers with like 40 kids and people, different people's leaders' houses and stuff, just watching movies and candy and just anything to get anybody's mind off stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was.
Were the children advised? Were the children aware that what had happened?
They were, but the kids were just like literally thrown into a world of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like nonstop parties. So right. They were trying to counter any kind of concern.
Right. Right. And of course, you know, that's what you do when calamity hits, you avail yourself of whatever pastime you can do to take your mind off. And of course with children, that's not too terribly hard, but beyond all that, of course, as you mentioned, there's this underlying paranoia about the world outside Remnant, you know, there. Sure. There was a concern about the potential for armed attacks or Remnant, and that was a magnification of their long-held fear that a disgruntled person would act on their impulses. I can't even imagine how they thought maybe this, how that could have played into the loss of the plane, whether it was a plot or something or other. And then,
right.
And then of course, Remnant had a security response that came over the church. The security teams went to hyperactivity, as you mentioned, and for example, you know, several of them were guarding the home where the children of the Walters and Joe's daughter were being secured.
Right.
So I guess Elizabeth, at that point, I guess that I got several black cars parked outside Ashland, and perhaps around all the homes where all those kids were at.
Right. Yeah, they beefed up major security, and you know, like I've already mentioned, like the soldiers of Christ. Right. I mean, they were. These were people just happy to do something, you know, that's their way of blocking out reality, blocking out grief.
Right.
I think people deal with grief different ways. Absolutely. They deal with the reality of the loss in different ways. Some people cry. Some people want to go volunteer and cook and bring meals to everybody.
Right.
Some people are going to want to go into overdrive and be a protector of Elizabeth and the kids. Security. That's what these men and women of the RF security team are going to do.
Right.
And I understand, you know, obviously beefing up the security. We've already mentioned that. I mean, that's very understandable.
Right.
Especially in the United States, based off, you know, violence and stuff. But I mean, they were absolutely stepping it up. And protecting God's holy Zion. They still they're gonna have to hang on to that, right?
Right.
Because if they can't, that's the whole point. That's the whole problem. That's why I always knew that was my big goal, is trying to explain to people. If 1%, that was what I would tell people. I'd say if 1% is wrong, then that leads to something else is wrong. That something else is wrong. And then eventually it's the domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me, remnant, if it's perfect, if it's God's holy place, if this is indeed New Jerusalem, but you got this happening, all I needed was one thing. I didn't need 100 things to prove that this was going to fail. Just needed one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it tears down, and people can't, their minds can't, they don't want to comprehend it, because then it leads to more uncomfortable dominoes falling.
Right.
And then it leads to, well, you know, they say everything Michael says is a lie. Everything David Shamlin says is a lie. HBO is a lie. It one thing after the next, and then that falls. And that opens the door to, well, maybe that was wrong. I was wrong about that too. Well, maybe I was wrong about Gwen's marriage to Joe. Maybe that wasn't as holy as it was made out to be.
Yeah.
Maybe I was wrong about how the leaders actually acted behind closed doors. Maybe I was wrong that Gwen actually wasn't the perfect anointed prophetess.
Mm-hmm.
And these men, they're going to do everything they can. These women, they're going to do everything they can to avoid reality. And the best way to do that is to replace the new queen of the hive, of the women church.
Right. They just simply cowboyed up. And they armed themselves with the teeth, as you just mentioned. And they didn't want to do the thinking. They just do what came naturally to them to handle it and hope for better days.
Everyone was already trained to operate in the cult mindset. Gwen had had the leadership that had all been so established that all it needed now, it was missing the head.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it needed, though, was to replace the head, because the system itself was so, people had been so trained, and I think I'd already explained that, they'd already been so trained to be okay with the bending reality. They're already trained to pivot. If Gwen's now moving to politics, okay, we're all going to worship politics. We're all going to become conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
You know, we're all going to do, David Martin now is a political expert. Whereas he didn't know anything about politics a month before. They were so trained to follow the leader and to do whatever it took to keep that propped up. That was their salvation. I always felt like that was their salvation. It wasn't God. It was making sure Gwen was propped up was their salvation.
Right.
If Gwen is right and Gwen is propped up and she's happy, then their salvation is secure.
Mm-hmm.
If Elizabeth now is propped up and she's happy, then their salvation is secure.
Right.
It is not a personal walk with God, a remnant.
Right. It's a cornerstone that's all centered around a person, not God, not of God. You know, it's just a person.
Right.
Yeah. You know, there's so many ways. There's all kinds of ways to understand tragedy and pain in our world, and we just don't have time to really discuss this. But in my humble opinion, what I'd like to offer as a minister of the gospel and someone who's also been one of Gwen and Remnant's thorns in their side over the twisting of the gospel, I just think something needs to be said about this horror from what I feel is a Christian perspective for those who might be listening. And I just want to just drop this to people think about. Those who care about this standard, you know, in the Bible, in various places, a cup is referred to as a vessel that can contain blessing or cursing. In Isaiah 51:17, the prophet warns a fallen Israel with that very symbolism when he writes, "Rise up, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, rise up, Jerusalem, you who have drunk from the hand of the Lord the cup of his wrath. You've drained to its dregs the goblet that makes man stagger." You know, when you hear about that symbol, this cup is a cup that contains God's judgment and rage against evil and sin. And when it overflows, he can't ignore or forbear it any longer. He doesn't. He has to do something with it. And he pours it out where it should fail. That's what scripture refers to over and over when you read about this imagery of the cup of judgment in scripture in Old and New Testaments. Now, while Jesus drank our cup of judgment through his sacrifice for our sin, as Christian teaching believes, we might drink his cup of salvation through faith in him, that being his good news. But his justice is still the terrible swift sword that can strike in any instant. And his eyes and ears are always open. He's always ready for his hand to move. And that's my conviction, is that Gwen and Joe, who were empowered by the ruthlessness of Remnant Fellowship leadership for so long, and she was about to take them down an entirely new direction. But she already been presiding over a systematic gang rape of the people of Remnant over the very divine institution of marriage and the family. She defied those sacred things one too many times, Michael, as I see it. And in 2021, Gwen got to drink her cup of judgment, and it wasn't Diet Coke. It was the most terrible reality anyone can face, to be stricken down to reap what you've sown to your flesh and sinful nature. The crash was God's judgment, in my humble opinion, for what it's worth. So that to me is how it should be understood if you're going to bring a Christian perspective into it. But then again, you know, Remnant's going to, of course, have their own views, whichever I already said. These people died heroes. They died martyrs. And so In the midst of the chaos, a Remnant order was being crafted and forced upon the movement and the leadership, which you've alluded to. So that enabled them to create from scratch this response task force to deal with so much of publicity, the scrutiny, the consequences. Everybody rallied to become to handle the press, to handle security, to take the calls from people that really did care and want to offer condolences and help. But above all, Michael, here's the next question I want to ask. In the dark night of your own soul, and I understand you were handling this in the way you could. You did not see the need for weeping or gnashing of teeth or anything like that. You were seeing a threat over your life, your very life, finally being lowered in the same way that others saw that. So what did it mean at that point in the days to come? What did it mean to your own personal internal struggle of a remnant? How had things changed to you that might have made things different for you though? Now suddenly the whip is gone. Okay, there's suddenly maybe some doors opening. What was going on in your mind at this point afterwards?
Well, I mean, I think you said it right when you said a dark, you know, part of, you know, what'd you say?
The dark night of your soul.
The dark night of my soul.
Everybody was worn. Yeah.
Yeah. I was worn out. I think, you know, not to put anything down, I think I was really starting to have questions about my own Christianity at that point.
Sure.
I mean, if I get really down to the darkness of it, the realness, I think a lot of my journal, you know, I look back over it. It was frustrating for me to see people who, you know, while they're lifting up their greedy hands, you know, inside the Remnant Sanctuary, but they've been bashing men and women, and they've been basically washing their own sins away, you know, with disassociating themselves with their sinning.
Yeah.
They've been their own gods. I was exposed to Gwen, Shamblin, Laura, for that long. You know, she had been lifted up. I think I'd seen her lifted up like some form of a woman Femi saint.
Right.
And I think it ruined the chances in a lot of ways. It ruined a lot of the chances of me going back to just being, I think it'd be a long, you know, keep people have just said, I'm still on this walk. You know, I'm still on this walk. It's never over till it's over. But I think it ruined a lot of chances of me wanting to go back in and be just jump into something else. I think it was so hard. The stuff had been drilled in our minds for so many years. I was tired of seeing a woman preacher. You know, she gave the congregation plans of living, and yet she did something different. I was tired of the double standards. I think this was finally seeing, I was hoping to see an end to it all. I had grown to hate these people, practically.
Yeah.
I had way too many experiences with receiving abuse. And, you know, I've seen the same, people think they've all seen the confusing double standard stuff. I have seen the same confusing, lying to themselves contradictions in this place. I had been wearing black for years. It was more, but now it was more of a mindset for me. It was the black mindset. It was, I think I was like, I was to the point where it's like, Remnant, if they had really been serious about what they believe, they should have kept those own thoughts on the front of their mind and not so many lavish, you know, white flowers, weddings, not letting Gwen get away with murder. I became something like somebody who wanted to like be like prepared, like ready for the lies.
Yeah.
And it was to me, like it was a symbol. It was to me, it was like, I was tired of hearing false Christians. I wanted at that point, like, I'm done. I want to be prepared from now on for any more just these trash talking people, these people that destroy people. You know, the one, like the ones you're looking at other cults and stuff. I want to be prepared for this. There's too many unsuspecting Christian men and women out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be ready. And I was tired of, I think I was tired of this absolute authoritarian leader thing. I think I'd had enough. I had my fill. I don't reject people being in leadership itself, but it's the dangerous form of it. And, yeah. You know, she's declared she's got divine right. You know, it's a dictator like woman, and it's somebody demanding blind loyalty. That's dangerous to me.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I was done with blind loyalty. I'm done with the religious regime. And I saw that was the end of Gwen's regime. That was a big deal to me.
Yeah.
It was a big deal to see the end of that regime. And I feel like I got to see it start and I got to see it end.
Mm.
And it was one, you know, it was one flawed person, you know, who believed that she was absolutely infallible. And now she's been checked by God. She has now been checked.
Right.
Finally, she finally met that. Eventually, I want to say that maybe David Shamblin said this to me one time at some point, but he said eventually somebody's going to say no. You're going to meet the person that says no. And it had to do with kind of, I think we were talking about remnant kids being wild. And eventually, like if somebody doesn't step in, then the government's going to step in. Or say, you know, eventually there's going to be something along the line where the world's going to say no. And this was God saying no.
Yeah.
And it had finally happened.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter how charismatic that she was. It doesn't matter how supposedly intelligent you are. It doesn't matter how full of love you supposedly, you know, how blindly, you know, how many followers you have. She had the absolute power. It was in the hands of a person, and it, just like it always goes, it distorted her judgment. She got arrogant. I've already mentioned the whole Icarus flying too close to the sun, mm-hmm. and Icarus falls to the earth, and now Gwen has fallen to the earth. And it, I think she didn't want wisdom. She wanted control. And that's what it bothers me now that I see Elizabeth trying to be like her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's where I was. I was going, I had spent so long, and there's still blind remnant sheep out there. The war, you know, I think I told you one of my favorite lines. It's the, you know, the race goes on, Judah.
Mm-hmm.
That's my philosophy. It's never, you know, we don't sleep on our laurels. You know, it's not done. The race goes on, Judah. That's a line from Ben-Hur when Masala says that at the very end, right before he dies. The race goes on, Judah. But I am now interested to see what Elizabeth does. Gwen's regime is done. That chapter is done. It's been written and it's done.
Yeah.
And now it's where is it going to go? I think we've already got a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Where
were you going, though? I mean, where in terms of...
Where was I going?
In terms of what had happened, were you just provided new food for thought on what you would be able to do now that era was over?
Well, I mean, what I had, you know, I was watching to see what was going to happen. We knew about the whole, you know, there was like the statement, right, that came out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think it was the statement about, you know, what.
Yeah. You and your official, sister would be like, you know, remnant. Yeah. There was this brave talk up by remnant leaders that you and your sister were going to be leading it. But within yourself, what was your actual response? I know you didn't feel it.
No, I didn't feel it. I think I was just, once again, I think I was looking to see what was going to happen. I was watching. I knew how they operated, and I think I just felt, I'm aware that it was sent out to everybody, and like, you know, I guess I didn't really care one way or the other at that point, because I already was seeing what they were doing action wise.
Right.
Like, you're going to have some people crying misogyny or something. I'm going to just throw it out again, because I guess I can't get much worse. I guess you can always get worse, I guess. But I'll say, you know, the phrase, you know, watch what a woman does, not what she says. I have heard that phrase before. I've put it in my journal. But that's, I was watching. It's a women's church to me.
Right.
And I was watching to see what they do. It's not what they say.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the statement doesn't mean much. I know they're basically playing damage control, you know, and remember what I mentioned to you about me being like the black sheep, right?
Right.
This was simply a way, with Elizabeth's blessing, to spread out the coming hits from the media. You know, everybody's bracing for this media hit. They were expecting that. And they're expecting the documentary's going to come out. I think it comes out just a few months later, right? In the fall.
Right.
And
September.
In September, so...
The crash took place in May of 2021, which necessitated their entire re-editing of the whole thing. That's the whole story in itself. We won't get into it now, but then they had to go back, redo all that, and then they were going to release it that spring, actually, when this happened. So they had to go back to the drawing board and rewrite the entire narrative, and it was in September that it came out.
Right. Okay, so... So then, you know, so that's what they're doing. They're divvying out. They're trying to make me out as a target. They're trying to put me out there as a target for all of these upset people. That's what I mean by divvying it out. Like, they're trying to make it look like I had been behind everything. That was Elizabeth. That was definitely Elizabeth's thought process and drive. You know, that was Gwen's, the same thing. She wants to take all the glory and power, but she's going to generously delegate the blame and the hateful reactions. So I'm, you know, like I said, I'm just the black sheep. They're going to put my name up there. And notice they put my name first because they're about to get attacked. So they put the church now taken over by Michael Shamblin and Elizabeth. It was a joke. It's a total joke.
Right.
Elizabeth was already running it. She was already running it 10 minutes after the crash.
Right.
They were already giving her updates 10 minutes after the crash. It had already been enacted. So it was a way to give me the black sheep. You know, anything negative, they're going to push it off on me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to be running interference for her. You're going to be blocking for her and
right.
dodging for her and being a shield for her while she was going to be behind the scenes running the show.
He's going to get to take credit for all the good things, but mm-hmm. the negative, we knew that so much negative is about to come out.
Yeah.
You've got so many angry families that have been hurt for so long. They need to have some other name up there. So they're going to put my name up there.
Right. Yep. And that's what turned out to be. They held on to, but by then, when well, let me just ask you this then. I know that was where you saw it going. So right. At what point did you ever come back and actually provide any leadership? They said you were going to be leading it. Did you ever go back to a meeting and with your sister and say, okay, boys, here's what we're going to do. Here's what's going to happen next. And
No such
moment ever took place. I know that.
No. I was trying. I was attempting somewhat to see how I was going to fit in very mm-hmm. briefly.
Right.
But then I had, you know, I think the very first service that I was going to help work out with Joe Langston and Annie Stites and everybody. I worked with Michelle McDonald, Tish Dunn. I was still going to the church office. Okay. Elizabeth was staying home, right?
Right.
She had already walled herself in. But so I was going over there, and this is like June something, I think maybe a month or two after July, and I'm yeah. trying to work on a remnant service to be, I'm like I told you, I'm a kind of productive type person. I'm always right. going to be doing something. So I'm trying to pitch in here. And I knew though, the writing's on the wall by this point, but I'm trying to pitch in and I work on the service and I do, this was very interesting to me. I kind of made a thematic, worship service outline. And I was going to, nobody had ever done this before, but I'm kind of a thinking outside the box kind of person. And I was like, okay, we don't have Gwen anymore. Elizabeth doesn't like speaking, but she may get on stage if I leave. What she had told me was the pressure was just too much for her. But so I was like, okay, then I'll try to take the pressure off her.
Right.
So I'll get up there. I'm going to set up the music. I had people like Derville. I had other leaders ready to go if she didn't want to speak last second. I was going like we were bending over backwards for her, even as she's leading it. And I had this first service set up, and I had picked out, there was kind of thematic. We'd worked on the music because now David Martin is gone too now.
Right.
So I'm kind of like running the music thing, so to speak. This is like, you know, I get one or two services to actually run the music. And we picked out the music and it was thematic. And I picked out a couple with Michelle McDonald and Jill Snap's help, who are kind of the librarian, kind of people that have all the video footage. I picked out a couple of clips of Gwen to play for this Saturday Sabbath morning service for Remnant. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the first time that me and Elizabeth have been there. It was only happened once. And I picked it out and I set it up. And that was the when I was working on, I was working in Gwen's office, and Amy Stites, I have witnesses to this. Tish Gunn is sitting there with me. Michelle McDonald is sitting with me. Amy Stites walks in. She hears that I'm putting two different clips of Gwen together, and not they weren't like right side by side. They were like one at the beginning and one was going to be played at the end. She walks in and she slams her hand down on Gwen's desk in front of me. I mean, slaps it as hard as she can. And Amy Stites is like shaking. She looks psychotic. And she goes, "The spirit of Gwen wouldn't have this." And she just like was shaking. And
The
I was
spirit of
like,
Gwen would not
"The
have this.
spirit of Gwen would not have this."
Okay. The phone broke up. That's why I'm repeating
Yeah,
it.
the
I see.
spirit of Gwen would not have this. And she slapped the desk so hard. And Tish and Michelle are shocked. I sit back and I'm in shock. I'm like, okay. And Amy walks out and I'm like, did y'all just see that? And I was just like, do you think she would have done that to me had if I had been the leader? No. But she did it. That's how she felt she could do that to me. And Elizabeth had been on the phone with her, and we did that one service and never, I was just, that's how I was treated.
Did
But
you use the videos?
Tish and Michelle still go there and they support Elizabeth, but they'll know they can deny it, but they saw it.
Did
They
you
saw it.
go ahead and use the videos anyway? Or you
I think
didn't?
we ended up like maybe just using one.
Okay. But what was the problem with that? I mean, I don't understand. What was her objection to you using two different videos?
I think it was more about me running it, me putting it all together.
Okay.
I didn't understand Gwen. I don't understand the women's movement. I can't read their minds.
So it's just this
I'm
completely
not going
arbitrary
to be the
thing.
one sitting in Gwen's seat. She was mad. Elizabeth was mad. They were all they were tired of me. But anyway, that's what that kind of is going on, right after the crash. And there's obviously other things going on. I don't even remember honestly now what you asked. Like, what were we talking about, like after the crash or
Well, no,
what were
you no. My question was, what, like you said, what was your involvement in?
Yeah.
And in with Remnant up to that point, at what point did it finally cease? What time, what point did you finally realize that there's no point in me coming back anymore? Or was that something that came to your mind? I mean, after something like that, I can certainly see why that might come to your mind, but I'm just trying to understand where you were in terms of trying to do the right thing and provide leadership.
They were already pushing me. I mean, I was being pushed out by Elizabeth and company, and I think we've already talked about possibly the Zoom call that she did, right afterwards, the leadership Zoom call where she said, "I don't care if this goes down to six people," and we you I knew what was going on with her, with Elizabeth. She was taking over that role. She was going to be the next Gwen Shandon Laura. I mean, she was even down to the starting to speak slower like Gwen, kind of like a little bit like the Gigi kind of stuff we were talking about. She was starting to do that to try to win over these mindless remnant sheep. And she was saying things both ways. I could see it immediately. I don't know how much we talked about this, but I could see it immediately. She was there. There were people saying she would say, like in a 30-minute talk, that I was going to possibly be leading Remnant with her, and then like 50 seconds later, she's saying something like, as far as she's getting the double sign, like she would be saying like the double signs like would be I could be possibly leading Remnant with her, and so then like 30 seconds later, then it's without a hesitation, she slips in a few seconds and she's like, but all these double signs, really, they mean that she had the double anointing. Like she had the double spirit of one. So she was saying things out of both sides of her mouth immediately. And she was already speaking like a false preacher, in my estimation. I mean, she was lying right flat out. And that's where I could see the writing on the wall. I knew it was happening.
Yeah.
And she was having the same bipolar kind of weird stuff. And, you know, we've talked about that with Gwen and the horrible leadership Zoom call. And then so right there at the very end, you know, I see it's done, right? I mean, I could see that after everything that had happened, I realized that this place, it's not even the way this place is looking, it's not even going to come close to looking like my salvation, right? Like what I've been looking for, the free, my seriously disturbed self at this point.
Yeah.
And by this point, you know, we don't necessarily have to go into all of it, but my wife was wanting out very much of the marriage.
Yeah.
And I knew Queen Elizabeth was relegating me to being like, you know, the little rubber stamp loser brother. And I'm basically methodically being pushed slowly out of any major decision making. And it's a painful way to leave, but I knew they're going to start this whole monitoring me thing with a new woman leader and her army, her RF army, which still exists all over again.
Yeah.
I started having this premonition in my mind, like it's all going to happen again. And I realized that it's time for Michael Black to make a change.
Thanks for listening today as we explore just where are we going. Our prayer is that you have been encouraged and strengthened, and if necessary, challenged in your daily journey through life. Jesus is coming. You can fall with the night, or you can rise with the sun. The choice is yours. You can email us with questions and comments at feedback@spiritwatch.org. And if you need urgent personal spiritual help, email us at help@spiritwatch.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Please follow our podcasting at our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. This podcast is a production of Spirit Watch Ministries, taking heed that no man deceives you.
If it's you're forced into creating a new gospel other than the one that Paul was preaching and that Jesus was preaching, because Jesus kept saying, repent or perish, repent or perish, we had to come up with a new one. That's just normal. We do that every day. We've got to justify ourselves, because that force right there is the largest force that drives your entire life. You will lie, you'll cheat, you'll do anything to make sure that you feel justified today.